Well, there is a landmark ruling today in the United States where the pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson has been ordered to pay $572 million for its role in the opioid crisis. Now, it's a ruling in Oklahoma, but it could have a profound effect here in Canada because it sends a message that this can't happen, that the opioid crisis is being taken very seriously, and that opioids are not something you want to mess around with, that they can really ruin somebody's life, that the effects of opioids cannot be understated, that they need to be carefully marketed and carefully prescribed. And joining us now to talk a little bit about some of the implications, we've got a Toronto-based lawyer. Now, she is not involved in any of the lawsuits, but she does have some good perspective on similar claims here in Canada. Jasmine Dia is on the line. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what was your initial reaction when you saw the results of this case today?
So I was actually glued to my computer screen yesterday when the judge delivered his decision. He provided a decision that is 42 pages in length. And when he delivered the decision, he just made some comments and then said that the full decision would be posted. And I think I had a jaw-dropping moment, which doesn't happen a lot in the practice of law where we're looking at a landmark decision. This has never happened before. We have never seen a pharmaceutical company being held responsible by a state like we did during this decision yesterday.
Well, the numbers, I think, alone are stunning because, I mean, you hear these family stories, but when you look at the numbers, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, opioids were involved in almost 400,000 overdose deaths in the U.S. from 1999 to 2017. So it's clear that it has just had a profound effect, and we're seeing that here in Canada, too. What do you think this ruling could mean for places like British Columbia and Ontario?
So you've said it correctly. We have a big crisis. We have a huge issue, bigger in the United States, likely because they have a much larger population than we have here. However, British Columbia has been hit hard. So has Ontario. British Columbia started a class action lawsuit against pharmaceutical companies, and Ontario intends on joining that class action. I think that the Oklahoma decision will be used as a framework for our lawsuits here in Canada, as well as the other lawsuits that are occurring and will occur by other states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ontario is an interesting one because we kind of watched as the opioid crisis started out west and it started the creep eastward, and then finally it hit. And I think that's when people started to realize this was a really serious problem.
It is. It's a huge issue. And the situation with the lawsuits, lawyers look at it, and so do members of the public that are monitoring the situation with the Oklahoma state lawsuit, as sort of similar to when tobacco companies started being sued, looking at the health effects, looking at the marketing practices, looking at the profound effect that it's having on the public, and now the resulting strain on the healthcare system. And really, what the provinces in of Ontario and British Columbia are trying to do is recoup some of the costs that the healthcare system has had to sustain as a result of the opioid crisis.
Do we have any sense of what the costs would be like in Canada?
Of the litigation?
No, just to the healthcare system. I mean, I know we've seen some of the numbers of opioid usage, but I don't think I've seen any numbers of how much this has cost the healthcare system in Canada.
I haven't seen any numbers either, and I think that there's so many measures that would have to be looked at, whether, you know, there's individuals that are overdosing and either they're going to pass away, unfortunately, or they need treatment in the hospital system. There's mental health and addiction facilities that are overworked with the strain on the system. There's family doctor's offices. There's walk-in clinics. There's so many different areas of the healthcare system that are impacted as a result of this crisis. Also, one thing that I learned a lot about yesterday, and this is really sad, is when babies are born and they're born addicted mm-hmm. to opioids.
Mm-hmm.
And the symptoms that they suffer, such as immense shaking after they've come out of the womb and they have this addiction to an opioid that they're no longer getting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually spoke to a father a couple months ago who had an adopted baby that was born addicted to opioids. And he just described the moment that he saw his baby and what it was like to watch his child go through this, to wean a baby off of opioids. It was horrifying. I want to put one more thing to you before we go. I'm seeing a number of responses online today where people are saying, oh, boo-hoo, the people who become addicted to opioids should be the ones that are responsible for their choices. You know, I saw one person tweeting, I've taken opioids for a fracture in my leg. I didn't get addicted. People are the ones that are responsible for their actions. It shouldn't actually be Johnson & Johnson. Another person compared it to saying, oh, well, would you go after McDonald's if you ended up eating too many hamburgers and you know, then you become obese and you have heart problems? Would you go after McDonald's? What do you think about people that are expressing that point of view? Is there any validity to that?
I can understand that perspective, but everyone is made up differently. And there is scientific evidence to demonstrate that opioids are highly addictive. And that's part of the issue here, that the pharmaceutical companies knew that they were highly addictive. They knew that there were other medications out there that could have been prescribed, but instead chose to prescribe the very addictive opioid. And there's only one reason why that decision was made. It was to ensure that people kept needing it and to ensure that there were increased profits. So while I understand how some would say that, I think that people going through the situation may have a very different opinion. I can tell you that I'm a personal injury lawyer, and so I have a lot of clients that suffer from chronic pain. And if their doctor is prescribing them a medication, they believe in their doctor, and they believe that this is the medication. It's not a street drug. It's something they went to their doctor. It was mm-hmm. prescribed, and that's what they received. And so there's trust placed in the system of the pharmaceutical company, the doctor that prescribed it, the pharmacy that filled the prescription. And so they take it. And when they become addicted, and, you know, they didn't ask to be addicted, they didn't ask to, you know, have the injury or the chronic pain symptoms, it's not their fault. And so, as I said, while I can understand some of those negative comments, I think that when the individuals are actually involved in that sort of addictive situation, it's very different from them. And for those that are treating those individuals, I don't think that the perspective is the same.
Well, listen, we appreciate your comments on this. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Jasmine Dia, a Toronto-based lawyer, not involved in any of the lawsuits, but just providing some expertise on what this could be in Canada. Because as she did mention, in British Columbia, which has seen the opioid crisis really terribly, especially here in Canada, they are applauding the decision that was rendered because they have filed a class action lawsuit against dozens of pharmaceutical companies, including Purdue Pharma. Ontario has seen that and has said that it plans to join that lawsuit. So it is very interesting for us to see here.